At Emory University, we are guided by a shared purpose and a spirit of collaboration. Students here push each other to think creatively and work together because we believe different perspectives lead to new ideas. We know that Emory's mission to create, preserve, teach, and apply knowledge in the service of humanity takes all of us. We do together better. Learn more at emory.edu.
How's everybody doing today? This is Tyler Dunn here with Bob McGinn. We are really broadening your musical horizons here. Did you know that song there, Bob?
I did not, Tyler, no.
A little Better Than Ezra, mid-90s alt.
I like it.
Good, yeah.
Yeah, good.
You've been kind of been drawn to this. And we got to set the record straight after that T.G. Shepherd incident that you're not this huge, huge country fan. I think you want to let the folks know.
Absolutely not. I would say my first love is Motown.
Okay. Motown.
Grew up in Michigan and went to school in Ann Arbor, so I would say Motown, product of the Supremes and all the other acts, you know, the Temps.
The Temps?
So that'd be number one.
Okay, yeah. All right, well.
Right.
And you go along with the times here as well.
Well, I have, yeah, and I'm far more into rock than country now. I just want to set the record straight, okay?
All right, now that we got that on the record.
Although, I guess I got to admit to this, I did drag my wife out to the casino last night. And saw the country legend, Mr. Mo Bandy.
Mo Bandy.
There was no rock going on. I had the night off. Okay. I went to see Mr. Mo Bandy.
Mo Bandy is Mo short for Maurice.
I don't know that.
Mo Bandy. Yeah. All right. Yeah. Better or worse than TG?
Take TG all the way.
TG
all
the way.
Come on, with the show. Let's go.
Let's talk football. You can't look forward without looking back, Bob. And mm-hmm. That was quite a game there in Indianapolis. So it's kind of funny. After all that craziness in Seattle, with the catch, the interception, the locker room. This was almost anticlimactic to have this crazy fourth quarter comeback, but a really great game that the Packers just blew.
Yeah. The Chuck Pagano factor, I don't know. This team played inspired football the second half. I mean, they really got after it. All right, so how do you see Green Bay's second half offense?
Yeah, I mean, they came out and they weren't balanced at all without Cedric Benson, obviously, throwing the ball all over the place. But I couldn't really blame Mike McCarthy for that. I think that they thought they could take advantage of a really banged-up Colts secondary, and in the first half they did, so why not stay in attack mode? It just didn't work out. That was a huge interception to start the half, and it kind of snowballed from there. What do you think? Do you think that they should have come out and ran the ball a little bit more? A lot of the offensive linemen this week have said they wanted to run the ball there.
Sure I do. I mean, either Aaron Rodgers or Mike McCarthy did not have a running play those first two series of the third quarter. And that's when the game got away from them, you know? I mean,
these are some pretty bad cornerbacks in there, though, for Indy. I mean, you should be able to beat those guys.
But those pretty bad cornerbacks played pretty good in the game.
Absolutely.
They did. I mean, Josh Gordy didn't in the nickel, but Cassius Vaughn was good at right corner. Surprised the heck out of me, but he played good. And they shouldn't realize that he wasn't a stool pigeon at halftime. You know?
That's a good. Can I use that? Stool pigeons?
You go with it.
Stool? Okay.
He wasn't that bad. And just keep going out there and doing what we do, you know, what we do, and we're going to execute our will with a 21-3 lead. Didn't make sense.
To play a devil's advocate here, though, I mean, Alex Green had, what, two carries heading into this game, and all of a sudden he's your guy. I mean, do you really expect him to be in sync with the offensive line and their zone blocking and to take advantage of some things there? I know he had the big run late, but, you know, it was 2-3 yards in a cloud of dust there for a while.
I would have given him one or two carries in those first two possessions of the third. That's not asking too much now, is it, Mr. Dunn?
Well, you're up 21-3. You have the league MVP. Just beat the Indianapolis Colts, whether you're passing, whether you're running,
granted,
whether you're taking a knee. You just have to win.
Granted. And then the offensive line and Rodgers got overwhelmed, swept off their feet. They got out scheme. They got out gun. They got out everything.
Andrew Luck outplayed Aaron Rodgers. I didn't see that coming.
You would have to say that. That's true.
Yeah, he made the plays late. You know, how would you judge Andrew Luck's performance? You've seen a lot of rookie quarterbacks and gotten that first look at a lot of them. Obviously, Cam Newton last year. Where does Luck's performance rank with what you've seen in the past?
Man, exceptional. He's only got one player on offense. Yeah. He's got Reggie Wayne, and he's 33. I know people were ripping me what the scouts told me the week before. I mean, the guy's speed has declined. It was this masterful game plan by Bruce Arians that, you know, got him free, and the Packers didn't play good defense. Luck, yeah. Tough, smart, took that hit from Perry and had a smile on his face at, you know, at the line of scrimmage the next snap.
Yeah, that was a little eerie to get drilled like that. The quarterback comes up smiling like he did.
Wow, it was really something.
Yeah.
Goes and pounds the Chuck Strong sign after that touchdown. How about that?
It was, and he willed him to win a big scramble there late in the game, and they had the touchdown. Now, Green Bay had a chance. They had a chance to win it. You know, they had a chance to tie and go to overtime. You know, some things really went wrong in that last drive there, too. I mean, Randall Cobb catches a long pass, could have turned upfield for some extra yardage. They waste some precious seconds there at the end. And Mason Crosby, who's, you know, really been on his game the past year, year and a half, just shanked it. I mean, what did you see?
Tyler, you've been at two training camps, right?
Yeah.
Have you ever seen him hit a ball that bad?
Never. No.
And we see, I don't know, over the span of August, 80 kicks under a rush. There's nothing even close to that. I mean, I sort of hated saying any pro player choked, but I said he basically choked in the game story. He kind of did. I don't know what else you can say.
I agree with you. He doesn't seem like a kicker that's easily rattled either. I know he's missed some of these big kicks before. He's made a few. But his demeanor, the way he goes about his business, it's very businesslike with him. We both talked to him. I don't think he's a kicker that has a thin skin anyway, and that he just totally, you know, succumbs to the moment. It was strange. Now, that's not an easy kick. And the offense didn't do Mason Crosby a lot of favors there either.
No, all good points. Very good. 51 yards. I mean, that's the status of kickers in today's football. That worth saying 51 is a choke. Come on now, you know.
Exactly.
I guess I was a little strong.
Now, you know, looking ahead here, just all a huge game Sunday night against the Houston Texans.
I think we need to talk about some history at Indianapolis, Tyler. Okay? Yeah. I'm going to interject that.
They've never won in Indy.
They are 0-4. And let's look at the three defeats, all right? They went over there in 85, and that was the game where they lost a close one under Forrest Gregg. And the media were assembled outside the locker room door at the old, what was it called, the RCA Dome?
RCA Dome, I think. Although that was 2 years before I was born as well.
All right, and all of a sudden there was just all kinds of noise outside that door. I mean, just slamming of bodies. You could hear yells inside. The door actually moved, so somebody had falling against that door.
In the Packer locker room.
Okay. We're right outside the door. In those days, the coaches would, you know, now they have a separate room for coaching press conferences, but then you just kind of go into a corner of the locker room. It was informal. It was more fun. And the head coach would just kind of stand over there and take questions, you know. All right.
The good old days.
So finally, after about 3-4 minutes, they opened that door. Cops opened the door. And we walked in, and the place was just, you know, was dead silence, and something had gone on big time. And later the story came, players were denying it, but at that later on, the strength, Mike Douglas, the 5'10 linebacker and one heck of a player, he objected to some things Forrest Gregg was saying about the team's effort. And the strength coach, Virgil Knight, threw almost a full Coke can of Coke at Douglas, at his head. And then a brawl ensued between Knight, a bunch of players, Douglas, and they had to be separated. And that's with all this body banging we heard. It was quite the story.
That was not abnormal for that tenure.
Well, that was, Tyler. A lot more crazy things going on then, but not quite to that extent. Okay. That was an exception, something you never forget.
So what are players saying inside the locker room? Do you remember?
They were all kind of denying. They were laughing. Okay. You know, they were just taking the NFL way to sanitize things.
Yeah.
Gloss it over, you know. Yeah.
Who doesn't throw a Coke can and toss each other around a locker? That's pretty normal, Bob.
Tyler, they went over in 97.
Oh, I remember that game.
Right?
Yeah.
So how old were you then?
10.
10. And you remember watching this?
Yes. They Green Bay, that was the year they went to the Super Bowl, but they laid an egg in Indy.
Correct.
Was that Paul, Justin, Lamont, Warren, and the winless Indianapolis Colts.
And coached by the great Lindy Infante. Jalindo Infante, right?
The great.
And I think Lindy was 0-11.
Wow, that's right.
He's about an 18-point underdog or something. Well, he won that game. He won it, let's check the book, Tyler. 41-38, Paul Justin.
How did they blow that game? I mean, the talent that that Packers team had. I know the defense wasn't, you know, the way it was a year before when they won the Super Bowl, but how do you give up 41 points to the pre-Peyton Manning Indianapolis Colts?
I can't remember. All I remember is walking out of that place talking to Leroy Butler on his way to the bus. Mm-hmm. Butler was ripping himself, his teammates. This is the most disgusting thing he'd ever seen in the world. You know, after games, good or bad, man, Leroy told it the way it was.
Still does.
He still does. He is up front. And he wanted all his teammates who maybe would say, no comment, don't come talk to me. He'd be ripping them in the locker room. He said, hey, when you win, you're talking. He would say something to
good
somebody.
Good for him, man. Yeah. Good for him. And, you know, that season's kind of funny. I mean, that was probably one of those warning signs where you saw a lot of the problems with that defense that were exposed in the Super Bowl against the Broncos, right? Yeah, that year they got over the hump against the Dallas Cowboys. They finally beat them at Lambeau. They beat the Vikings in the Metrodome. But then they lose to the Colts like that. It just kind of foretold a lot of things about
good
that
point.
Defense.
Then the Packers went over there one other time, Tyler, in 2004, and they fell that day 45-31, September 28, 2004. So it was a Favre Manning show. You watch this on the tube?
You're right, right.
In 2004, okay. And Manning, I don't know how many touchdowns he threw, six or something like that. And let's see, the Packers secondary that day that got torched, there was Michael Hawthorne at a corner. Big Mike, about 6'2". Jason Horton was at a corner. I think he was the nickel. He got burned. Al Harris, beaten by Marvin Harris on a touchdown, 28-yard touchdown, 20-yard over route, drew a penalty, should have had another. Darren Sharper was terrible at safety. And then the dime safety, Mr. James Whitley. Remember him? He had a simple alignment error and led to a Stokely's 27-yard touchdown. So that was the secondary that day under Bob Slowick, the coordinator.
And Brett Favre just couldn't keep up. I mean, they for a while there, they were trading possessions.
And there was a big fumble by Javon Walker. Javon caught 11 of 12 balls that day. He was incredible.
Wow.
Yeah.
And pretty remarkable, Reggie Wayne was on that team as well. I mean, and that was a long time ago. And here he is in 2012, still doing his thing.
Wow. Interesting.
So where does this loss to Andrew Luck and the young rebuilding Colts compared to 85, 97, and 2004.
Well, it's not as bad as 97.
On the devastation scale.
It's not as bad as 97.
Yeah, it's not that bad. Right. They have some talent on this Colts team.
85, those Colts I think were coached by Ron Meyer, and the Packers are on their way to an 8-8 season, so that really wasn't a huge upset. Mm-hmm. And 04, that was a toss.
Just a good
toss.
Game.
Yeah. This one here, they were, a 7-point dog? So it's the worst loss for Green Bay since the Tampa Bay game in 09, right?
Right. Well, what, as a reporter, what was it like to cover that game in 96 before we move on? When you covered Lindy Infante when he was coach of the Packers, and then you see him. That was probably his signature win as a coach.
Oh, no
right?
question.
Right? I mean,
what
was he like? He had to be puffing his chest out, I'd imagine.
Well, I thought he was going to go 0-16, you know? Mm-hmm. I think one of his starting guards was Tony Mandarich.
Yeah.
Yeah, and he didn't have much. And
vindicated, Bob.
Boy. So then Jalindo, he lasted about another year over there.
Wait, his name is Jalindo?
Yeah.
That's his actual name?
G-E-L-I-N-D-O.
Jalindo.
I don't know his middle name, but it was Jalindo Infante.
Why would you go to Lindy if your name's Jalindo? If I had a name like Jalindo, hell, I'm keeping that name.
You like that handle?
I like it. First, my firstborn, Bob, Jalindo Dunn.
Jalindo, one of the things he always used to say was when he'd be asked a question about, I don't know, about his roster, about something, he said, well, guys, I haven't really put a pencil to it yet.
What?
Yeah, like he hadn't really figured it out or thought it through. I just haven't put a pencil to it yet.
You can erase a pencil, though. You can't erase a pen. I just say pen. Okay.
The power of the pen.
Let's talk some Packers here.
That was
a good trip down memory lane, though. All right. It doesn't get any easier for the Packers here, Bob. I mean, these are two huge games. The players aren't going to say that they're must wins. They're saying all the right things this week. But they have to understand that you lose at Houston, you lose at St. Louis, you're 2-5 in an NFC that's wide open. This is about as close to a must win game in October as you're going to get in the NFL.
So if they lose, they're 2-4. Can they get to 10-6 after being 2-4?
No, it's something they've done before. I mean, we were just talking about that 2004 Packers team and and under Sherman. They started some seasons, what, 1-4, and managed to rally and get it together.
Right.
The schedule does get a little better for Green Bay, I think. Some home games, considering they were 15-1, it's not that bad of a schedule. But, I mean, I don't know. I think that this game and, of course, that one in St. Louis are just huge. And this isn't going to be an easy one.
I think they're going to win the game.
Do tell. Explain.
Just the way the NFL is, you know. I mean, they're coming off a Monday night road game, Houston. They lost Cushing. That's a tremendous downer, their middle backer. Green Bay's got more sense of desperation. Green Bay's got a few injuries, but the way these teams circle the wagons, it happens every week. I mean, this stuff, Green Bay can pass the ball on anybody. They can. I mean, they have the people to do it. They should be emotionally charged for this thing. McCarthy's been all over them, I'm sure, all week long, behind closed doors, probably really reading the riot act. I think they're going to win the game.
Wow.
How do you see it?
I can't see them winning this. I think it's going to be competitive. I think that you're right in the sense that they can rally around these types of weeks, these types of situations. They've done it before under Mike McCarthy. I mean, I guess they didn't win that game at New England a couple years ago. That's what I'm kind of thinking of, where they lost at Detroit. A lot of guys hurt, but they come out. They played pretty inspired with Matt Flynn against New England. Mm-hmm. I think you see that type of effort from the team. You crunch the numbers, you look at the matchups, it's going to be tough. I mean, they have a guy in J.J. Watt who is just absolutely wreaking havoc, and it's not just him. Connor Barwin, Brooks Reed, they drafted Whitney Mercilus out of Illinois. They have a lot of guys who can get after the quarterback. It's going to be awfully tough for Green Bay to keep those bodies off Aaron Rodgers, especially without Cedric Benson. They have to be able to run the ball a little bit down there in Houston.
I agree with all that. Houston's defense is legit. Now, they lost Cushing. Now, that is an extreme factor against the tight end and in that interior run game.
All right, yeah, no Cushing, but who does Green Bay have at tight end? As we're taping this, Jeremichael Finley and DJ Williams both didn't practice today.
I agree, Tyler, all the way. That's a problem. Yeah, they can't exploit the loss of Cushing. All right, so say Green Bay can't score more than 21 or 24. All right, let's give them 21. All right, now let's look at the Houston offense. All right, so Green Bay's going to have that eighth man in the box, and they're going to have to stay on their feet as best they can, and they're going to have to play out of their minds to stop Arian Foster, right? It's really a good line on the left side. Dwayne Brown, premier. I mean, this is going to be a tremendous matchup against Clay Matthews. This guy is one of the few who can hang with, you know, Matthews without chipping.
So that's probably what they're going to do. I mean, a lot of teams have really been ganging up on Matthews, so they'll probably see some one-on-ones this week.
I think so. Wade Smith, he's an okay guard. He's an old guy, but he can cut, and he's athletic still. The center's terrific. Chris Myers in this scheme, he'll seal those linebackers at the second level. He's terrific.
A guy, remember, Chris Myers in the offseason could have been a possibility in Green Bay. Remember, there was some interest there.
There was. That's when Wells was leaving, and Green Bay thought Myers was too expensive as well. The problem for Houston, really, is their offensive line on the right side. They got four guys who are switching off. All of them are vulnerable against power, against speed. Schaub's not going to be able to sit back there and look for this stuff. They throw off play action, right? So Green Bay has to rally to Foster. Downfield, this is not the Andre Johnson that people remember. He's not getting off the ball. He's had a few drops. I mean, he is not a special player anymore.
But we were saying this about Marcus Colston and Reggie Wayne to an extent these past 2 weeks, right? I mean, Colston had the foot problems. He's slow. Reggie Wayne is old. I don't know. I think they got to be careful not to sleep on some of these receivers.
They do. I mean, I agree totally.
Yeah.
I'm just saying there's a scenario here where they can win this game. I mean, Schaub, you can get after Schaub. Do you buy him?
I'm not so sure. I'm not sure about the right side of Houston's line. You say there's some vulnerability there.
Kevin Walters, the other wideout. The third wideout's going to be Lester Jean, who's missed a couple weeks, a big 6'4 guy.
And that's big,
He's not explosive.
We were just sitting around the office the other day trying to think of who their third receiver was. So that's who it is. I think they kind of use the tight ends a little bit more.
Tremendous. Yeah, and Daniels is really a good player, the ex-Badger. Yeah. Graham's not bad. And, you know, the H-back James Casey kind of makes plays. He's just kind of a reliable guy. I mean, their defense is better than their offense. Mm-hmm. I'm saying Green Bay can win this game 21-17, 21-14.
Boy, it really does have to start with their ability to contain Arian Foster. I mean, this is a guy who's patient, who reads his cutback lanes, and in that scheme, he's just perfect for it. If B.J. Raji can't go, that'd be a pretty big loss for Green Bay.
So we're doing this Thursday afternoon after practice. I mean, do you think Raji's going to be on the field?
I think he might be taking this week off. You know, I asked him if just the circumstance of the season, Green Bay being 2-3, facing Houston this week, at St. Louis next week, two huge games, if that would play into his timetable, his decision. And he was pretty honest. He said, you know, not all is not lost in these two games. That tells me that maybe he'll kind of take a page out of Greg Jennings' book and just be patient, give this ankle another week. You know, this is the same ankle he had problems with earlier in the season. So with him, I mean, you want a healthy B.J. Raji down the road. So as tough as times are right now, my gut says he doesn't play.
All right, so if Raji's out, let's say it's a 70-snap game, so Raji would play 45, let's say. All right, so how do you see the D-line making up for those 45?
Well, C.J. Wilson was telling me today that Mike Daniels would have to step into a much larger role if Raji can't go, which did kind of surprise me. He's been inactive at times. He hasn't really done a heck of a lot. Mm-hmm. But he might have to play a big role against Arian Foster in Houston. Now, Mike Neal has kind of come on. You can probably pick it on the nose if you need to, and you have Jarrell Worthy as well, C.J. Wilson. So they can shuffle it around up there. But I think that Raji was really off to a pretty good start to the season, and it all starts with him in the run game.
And against the front, I mean, Chris Myers, the center, he's like 6'4.5". He is not a power player, and this is a guy Raji could have really, used good strength point. On strength against.
Good point.
That hurts, yeah. Hurts him.
You know, and there's a chance he plays, and he grits it out. I mean, he could still play here. I think Friday's the big day, obviously.
Okay. Anything more about the Titans, Tyler?
You know, I just think that the way they built that defense is something all teams should take a look at. I mean, when they had Mario Williams and a bad defense around him, they still went out and drafted a ton of pass rushers. In 09, they take Barwin high in the second round, a guy who played a little basketball at Cincinnati, kind of shot up the boards late in the game, had a great combine. He can get after the quarterback. The next year, you take a guy in Brooks Reed, kind of like, I think you said, he's a poor man's Clay Matthews. He gets after it, hard-working player. You look down the line, I mean, then J.J. Watt, 11th overall, a great pick. Obviously, his season speaks for itself right now. He's the defensive player of the year as we speak right now. And then Whitney Mercilus, they didn't need him. Yeah, here he is playing 10, 15 snaps a game, somebody you can rotate in. And that's what it's all about, getting after the quarterback, just compiling pass rushers. It's tough. I mean, what about this past draft? When we're looking at the board, Green Bay's picking 28th. And then bang, 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 bang. These pass rushers are just flying off the board. Houston, they were ahead of the curve here, and that's how they were able to turn it around. Obviously, Wade Phillips and moving to the 3-4 had a lot to do with it.
Yeah. All right, so if you're starting a team right now, would you want Clay Matthews or J.J. Watt?
Put me on the spot.
You'd want them both, yeah. What do you think?
Let's see if Watt can keep this up.
Yeah.
We have to see if he can sustain it because he really started coming on in the playoffs last year. Not that he had a bad rookie season, but that's when he started coming on. He's going to see a lot more attention for a 3-4 D end to have the impact on games that he's having is just kind of rare. I'd still take Clay Matthews over Watt.
I think I would too, but it's really, really close. Mm-hmm. Boy, I like the D lineman who can rush the passer.
And what about his ability to bat the ball down? 8 knockdowns this year. It's something he said he worked on back at Wisconsin. He practices it. I mean, it's something that looks kind of easy, like he's just sticking his arms up there. But it takes timing. And now he's actually trying to tip it to teammates a little bit.
And he's done it, three picks have been the result, right?
Right.
3 out of 8. You know, Watt scored 31 on the Wunderlich. This guy is bright, bright, bright. He's got 11 1/8 hands that were the largest at the combine. He's got long arms. He's 295. He's got an edge about him, too. Mm-hmm. When I stood next to him at the combine, watched him talk down there. This guy has just got everything right now.
And he's kind of like Pierre Paul with the Giants, where he came onto the scene late. You know, he was a tight end at Central Michigan, right? A walk-on at Wisconsin. He's just now scratching the surface. I think if you're the Texans, that's where you're pretty excited with this guy.
Well, good call on Pierre Paul. Pierre Paul was number 15. Watt was number 11, you know? Yep. And these guys just kind of came out of somewhat nowhere, and wow. Yeah.
So how's Green Bay going to try to contain this guy, Bob?
Well, he's going to, in base, he's going to travel with the tight end. He'll be left or right, wherever the tight end goes. He and Reed will be together on one side, and then the other side, you got Barwin and Antonio Smith. In sub, you got Watt will play both left tackle and right tackle, and then the ends will flip Reed and Barwin. There's just going to be a lot of one-on-one stuff. I mean, Bulaga, I was watching that tape of that Jet game. I mean, their tackles couldn't handle his quick hands, his strength. In the run game, Watt would come off outside of the right tackle early in that game and then just flatten down inside so fast, and he would tackle the Sean Green on a dive play, you know, tackle him from the side. And he didn't cut inside. He went upfield around, you know, around upfield on the right tackle and then cut inside. It was amazing. You just don't see it.
And it's incredible when teams are able to block him and he's in a stalemate and he can't do anything, he can still find a way to make a play. And not a lot of guys can do that.
No. He's coached by Bill Kohler, by the way. I guess we should mention that. He's the D-line coach, assistant head coach, and Kohler's been doing it for 30 years. He is a great D-line coach. He ranks with Jim Washburn when Rod Marinelli was a D-line coach. A few others. I think Mike Turgovec is terrific in Green Bay as well. Yeah. He belongs to be in that list too.
Interesting. Good stuff. So let's talk about the Packers a little bit.
Sure.
Huge loss that we know about. Cedric Benson. He's on injured reserve with the designation, eligible to return after 8 weeks. So they're without their starting running back for a very long time here. Now they're going to go to a committee approach. Alex Green, James Starks, Brandon Sane. Green's going to get the first crack at carries. Showed a little bit, obviously, in that 41-yard run, a nice cutback. Put some great moves on him. He's first in line, Bob, but you know, how big of a loss is Cedric Benson to this offense? He was really the one bright spot.
I wouldn't call it extreme, but I would call it sizable, certainly. Mm-hmm. Tyler, the fumbles with this guy will come. I totally believe that. And then you wouldn't, you know, people wouldn't be looking that highly on the guy. But to this date, I mean, he's improved a lot. He was finding the holes. He was pressing it. He was cutting it back good, and he had forward body lean. It was impressive, and he's a good guy. Yeah. You've dealt with him a lot.
Yeah, it's kind of funny. You have preconceived ideas for somebody who's been in trouble, and you think he might be a problem in the locker room. He wasn't at all. And all the other running backs speak so highly of Cedric Benson. And Brandon Sane, I was like, you know, are you surprised? You haven't had one carry this year. He said, you know, it's actually to my benefit. He said Cedric Benson's been a great mentor for him. Same for Alex Green. So, you know, that you're right. His patience and his ability to fall forward and really read the blocks within the scheme. I mean, he learned fast. It didn't take him long to really get acclimated.
All right, Tyler, let's just take a different exercise. Let's look at the starting running backs and say who you'd take, Benson or, all right? Would you take Benson or DeMarco Murray?
Murray.
I agree. Benson or Ahmad Bradshaw?
Bradshaw.
I go toss up. Benson or LeSean McCoy?
McCoy.
I agree. Benson or Alfred Morris?
Benson, but I tell you, Alfred Morris is having one hell of a season, Bob.
Have you seen him?
Yeah.
Florida Atlantic.
Who'd have thunk it?
He was like a number three fullback on my list. And, you know, he's a one-back guy, and he's pretty good.
Yeah, we might have to revisit that one later in the season.
Benson or Matt Forte?
Forte.
I agree. Benson or, let's go to Michael LaShore.
That's Benson.
I agree. Benson or Mr. Adrian Peterson?
Pass.
Benson or Michael Turner?
Boy, at this point, within Green Bay's zone blocking scheme, I'm going to say Benson. I don't know. Turner's, he's getting older. I feel like the wheels are going to come off here soon.
I'm going to pick him. Benson or D'Angelo Williams?
Benson.
Okay. Benson.
What do you have for that one?
I agree. Okay. I agree. Benson or Pierre Thomas?
Pierre Thomas. I like Pierre Thomas.
I love Pierre Thomas's toughness, but I'm still taking Benson.
Okay.
All right. Benson or Doug Martin?
Benson for now.
Toss up. Benson or...
Hey, you can't say toss up here every time.
Benson or Beanie Wells, who's out for a while, I guess.
Benson.
All right. Benson or Frank Gore?
Yeah, Frank Gore.
I agree. Benson or Marshawn Lynch?
Benson.
No, I'm going with Lynch.
I think he's a little overrated.
Benson or Steven Jackson?
Well, what?
Huh?
go back to Lynch here. Okay. Just explain, just talk a little bit about Marshawn Lynch here. I mean, he's kind of had a little renaissance there with the Seahawks.
Very much so. He bleeds yards. He's with a team that has to have him. They're going to feed him the ball all night long.
Packer fans were clamoring for this guy a couple of years ago. I mean, should they have traded for him, looking back?
I can't really remember the circumstance. What was that, 2 years ago? You think they
early
should?
Early 2010, when Ryan Grant went down, and they kind of putted ahead with Brandon Jackson, and then, that was that season. And then James Starks came out, obviously, at the end of the year. I don't know if Lynch would be a good fit in Green Bay.
I don't either. He could have been arrested. He could have done crazy stuff.
Right.
Seattle, he's been fine right now that we know of. So
Green Bay, you can get in trouble in this city, can't you?
Oh, really?
It's crazy.
As if I would know. All right, Benson or Steven Jackson?
Benson right now. Steven Jackson has not had a good start. I know he's battled some injuries.
Are you
right
kidding?
Now. If they're both healthy, Steven Jackson.
I'm taking Jackson.
Okay.
I don't care what he's got. All right, let's go over to the AFC. Benson or let's say Fred Jackson.
Fred Jackson.
All right. Benson or Reggie Bush?
I'm going to say, I'm going to go Reggie Bush.
I'm going Benson. Benson or Stephen Ridley?
That's a really close one there. That's a close one. Ridley's having a heck of a start to the season.
Okay.
Don't know if he'll be able to keep it up, but boy, he's a good fit for what they're doing there.
Benson or Sean Green?
Benson. Boy, Sean Green's game is a mess right now.
Okay, I'll go with it. Benson or Ray Rice?
Ray Rice.
Okay. Benson or Ben Jarvis Green Ellis?
The law firm?
Mm-hmm.
Boy, and this is the exact question the Bengals had to face this past offseason. You know, they went with Ben Jarvis Green Ellis because they are going to more spread, open, passing type of an offense. So for the Bengals, I'm going to say they did the right thing with Green Ellis.
I'm taking Benson. Benson or Trent Richardson?
Trent Richardson.
All right. Benson or Rashard Mendenhall?
Mendenhall.
I'll go with it. I agree. Benson or Arian Foster?
Arian Foster.
I agree. Benson or Donald Brown? We just saw him on the same gridiron.
You know, that's one thing we didn't talk about with that Packers-Colts game. How does Donald Brown get to the edge as much as he did? He really made Green Bay look slow, didn't he?
Slow and not very tough on the edge and contain and run support.
I'm going to say Benson, though. I don't think Donald Brown is as good as he looked Sunday.
I'm taking Donald Brown in a close one. All right. Benson or Jones-Drew?
MJD.
Benson or Chris Johnson?
You got to go Benson.
Really? Is Johnson that bad?
I know he had a good game recently. It looks like he might have the burst back a little bit, but it kind of came against some nickel and dime fronts when they were expecting the pass. I don't know. I think Chris Johnson days are, I think the countdown's on for him.
Benson or Willis McGahee?
McGahee.
Wow. It's close, though.
It's close.
Yeah.
Two similar veteran guys.
Benson or Jamal Charles?
Jamal Charles, leading the league in rushing right now.
All right. Benson or Darren McFadden?
Boy, the guy has had trouble staying healthy, and he hasn't, you know, burst onto the scene like a lot of people thought this season, but you have to go McFadden.
I agree. Benson or Ryan Matthews?
Ryan Matthews.
A healthy Ryan Matthews?
A healthy mind.
All right, so it's a big loss.
It is.
Yeah, he's a good player.
Yeah, we took Benson more than I thought we would
then. Yeah, right.
And mostly because he's been a good fit and kind of a mini revelation for this offense. But, all right, moving ahead, Bob. What do you think? What do you think is going to happen here with the running game? Everybody kind of agrees that they have to be able to run the ball to complement things right now because Aaron Rodgers has not been himself. The receivers haven't been themselves.
They're running right now, McCarthy and Rodgers, on these play calls 34.7% of the time. Tyler, that is so low, it's just like anemic. 34.7 in Green Bay. Now, it's going to change with cold weather just naturally. It's got to change some this coming Sunday night. What's going to happen? I don't know if these players are good enough. I mean, Starks was good in 2010. We haven't seen him take a hit since August 9. I don't really know.
Yeah.
Sane, he's more of a receiver. And Green, I wish I knew more. What do you think?
Green just needs more touches, I think. We can't really get a read on him yet. He's looked promising at times in the preseason last year on that 41-yard run this year. He just hasn't had the ball a lot, so he's going to get the first look. I think eventually, a week or two down the road here, James Starks is the guy at running back.
He gets
the majority of the carries.
You do, right?
I do. I mean, he's going to be cold coming in. But, you know, I asked Alex Van Pelt today, do you think some of the, that Starks and Sain are going to be cold because they haven't had a carry yet? He said they don't have time to be cold. Mm-hmm. So he's going to get his chances. I just think he's a better back. He's got some experience in the offense. When he's been healthy, he's been effective. So I'm going to say James Starks is serviceable.
And by the way, you know, we went through those 32 depth charts, right? We're looking at this. Tyler, in your new job at USA Today, you're going to be doing stuff like that all the time.
That is correct.
And you are the man for it. I mean, you know this league great, and you're only just going to be, you're going to expand your knowledge very soon. So congratulations again, buddy.
Geez, well, hey, thanks a lot.
All right.
I'm no Bob McGinn and never will be.
All right, so where do we want to go now?
You know what? Let's talk about violence in the NFL, Bob. You wrote a very insightful column a week ago on just how much the league has changed. And I tell you what, that game against the Colts was kind of a good backdrop for that column. You saw the hit by Nick Perry on Andrew Luck. They said he hit with the crown of his helmet. Kind of looked like the face mask in the shoulder to me. Huge penalty, big fine, and that's not abnormal in today's NFL.
No, it's not. The Perry thing, I mean, I was thinking it could have been 20,000 or 25,000. There have been some of these, you know.
Do you think that it was warranted then? I just think the impact of the collision, the whiplash of Luck's head, it looked a lot worse than it actually was.
Yeah, right. I mean, it was such an explosive hit by this 265-pound rookie, right?
Right.
That the fierceness of it, okay, was one thing, but then the illegality of it you think is minimal.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I hear you.
I think so.
Let's talk about the Monday night game with when Brian Cushing and the Texans got cut. All right, so the guard Slauson, Steve, is it from the Jets?
Matt,
right, okay. Right. So he goes out to try to seal him off, and he really missed the block. And then Cushing is going to pursue down to his left, to the offensive right, and the guard comes back towards. Now, one line coach told me that if you move back the other way, that should be a penalty. But anyway, he chops him on that left knee, and his season's over, right? So before I wrote that column last week, I was talking to B.J. Raji about some of these violent things that occur around the line of scrimmage. And we're talking, and
I think these are two very different things we're talking about here, right, between Perry and that direction.
Oh, yeah, right. Now we're talking about interior alignment. Yeah, and player safety.
Absolutely.
And so I asked B.J. about, you know, the player safety, and he says, well, let me find what he said. All right, he said, it's funny how the quarterback in some positions are so protected. But he said, but I can be engaged with a blocker and someone can come and chop my legs and no one cares about that. Now, this is basically what we're talking about in the Jet game. And he says, if you watch when Pittsburgh's Ziggy Hood got hurt against Oakland, they feel that if the blocker is adjacent to you, it's a legal block. Hmm. And that's how Seattle blocked us as well. So at the end, I asked him, I said, does the NFL really care about your health and safety? And BJ said, I think we all know what it's really about. I'm not going to go on record about how I feel particularly, but I just feel the actions and what's said don't match up.
It's about offense.
That was the
end of it. It's about points, and it's about quarterbacks. It all comes back to that, right?
Yeah, which is basically BS, you know?
I totally agree. It's not right. I think we were at the Super Bowl when Roger Goodell had a press conference, and in so many words, he kind of said, that's what people want, and that's the way it's going to be. So I don't know what the NFL is going to be like in 5-10 years, but I think that B.J. Raji makes a great point there, and obviously Clay Matthews went on to Twitter after this Cushing low blow and pointed out the hypocrisy with the league, that how can you protect the quarterback and the receivers so much when the linebackers and D linemen, they're getting their legs chopped down every game. It's very hypocritical, and the league's got to look into it. Now, I know Slauson got fined today, but I don't think it's – I think this stuff happens a lot. It just Cushing towards ACL.
And I'm just going to mention this. You know, I know it's kind of crazy. Everybody thinks, well, people want to watch these quarterbacks, and they want all these points. Well, I'm not so sure they do. I'm really not. At various points in NFL history, backup quarterbacks have played, and they become compelling stories.
Mm-hmm.
Baltimore's Tom Matty, a quarterback at Ohio State in the early 60s, late 50s, he was a running back for the Colts, and he was pressed in to start a quarterback several games down the stretch. In fact, he had to play quarterback against the Packers in a playoff game, I believe, And it was just unreal. He probably threw the ball six or seven times. The Colts made do, and I think they lost at the end. But right. And there's a history of all kinds of backup quarterbacks. It's great theater. You don't have to have this wide-open stuff and spread offense and 45 points and 500 yards. It's just – do you like watching that?
I think, and it's funny. Like the backlash that you get from guys like James Harrison and defensive players with the direction of this league as it kind of cuts deeper and deeper and deeper, that backlash is greater than I think anything you would lose from keeping it the way it is, where you know, the quarterbacks aren't necessarily protected. I mean, they to an extent, they should be, right? I mean, they are the quarterbacks. They're going to take some shots, but it has gone over the deep end.
It's just, it's too much, and all the records and all the stuff on offense, I don't even pay any attention to it. How can you compare eras? I mean, glad I'm not on the Hall of Fame committee, Tyler, because I wouldn't want to have that job.
And it's, and what about Johnny Unitas's consecutive touchdown record? It's broken by Drew Brees, and I think Unitas's record in a lot of people's mind is going to remain the record. And to do what he did in that era, compared to what Drew Brees did, it's apples and oranges.
Tyler, through 4 weeks, the average NFL passer rating was 86.4, I believe it was, or 86.1. Do you believe that?
Yeah.
Brett Favre's career rating, I think, was 86.5. I mean,
and it's funny. I mean, anybody that's kind of watched the games and remembers how what Aaron Rodgers did last year, we're kind of saying, yeah, he hasn't been himself this year. He's been outplayed by the likes of Alex Smith and Andrew Luck and hasn't performed up to his standard. Yet there he is with a passer rating of, what, 98, 99, something like that. And it's statistically, he's having a good season, but the eyeball test probably doesn't pass it. I mean, that's just kind of the way the NFL is right now, I guess.
Right.
All right.
I agree. Anything more on violence? I don't...
No, I agree. The problem with this, too, is it's only going to get worse. I mean, I think these are institutional changes that are just really soaking into the NFL, and they can't reverse this trend. How do you reverse this trend? Roger Goodell's not going to do it. The league's not going to do it.
And so defenses are going to be basically helpless.
Correct.
Until cold weather, snow, rain, wind slows down the offense.
Poor Sam Shields, man. Guy can't catch a break. The two defensive pass interference penalties that weren't. And that's a whole other issue is these DBs are put in tough spots.
Man, they can't even touch people, Tyler. You know, I don't know how you coach it. I was asking Joel Witt those questions last week, the Green Bay CB coach. I mean, he's not one to complain, and he's really not. He makes no excuses.
He keeps it real.
Joel Witt does. He is one tough guy. But again, hearing his explanation for how he coaches people, I mean, it's like when I was playing high school basketball in the late 60s. And at that point, Tyler, officials, there was no body contact.
Huh.
I mean, if you're playing the post or you're playing a guard, and if a guy cut by you or something and you were in man, you could not touch him.
Wow.
It was touch falls. And now it's just become that way in NFL secondaries. Yeah. Touch falls are just, you know, taboo.
It's patty cake.
Bob. It is.
Patty cake. Mm-hmm. All right. Well, hey, on that note, we're going to sign off here, Bob. What do you say? Unless you got something to add.
Nope, I'm good with that, Tyler.
All right, and we are off to Houston. You pumped?
Oh, very.
Do you like Houston,
Fly
Texas?
Fly out Sunday morning. I can't wait for Sunday and Monday. That'll be great.
I'm heading out Saturday, man.
All right, have a good time.
All right, well, we'll different flights then. We gotta sync these together. All right, well, hey, thanks a lot for listening, everybody. Yeah. For the Journal Sentinel, I'm Tyler Dunn. This is Bob McGinn. You can shoot us an email anytime. Thanks a lot.
If you're a maintenance supervisor at a manufacturing facility and your machinery isn't working right, Grainger knows you need to understand what's wrong as soon as possible. So when a conveyor motor falters, Grainger offers diagnostic tools like calibration kits and multimeters to help you identify and fix the problem. With Grainger, you can be confident you have everything you need to keep your facility running smoothly. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Hey, football fans, Drew Brees here. Kroger Play and Owner's Box have teamed up for the next generation of daily fantasy sports. First-time players can get $25 in free entries, plus 250 fuel points. And you can score all season long with 2x the fuel points for every dollar spent to use at Kroger Fuel Centers. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER.
Void where prohibited. Eligibility restrictions apply. 18 plus in most eligible states, but age varies by jurisdiction. Offer is valid between 8-6-25 and 1-5-26. Terms apply. See full terms and conditions at ownersbox.com/footballfuelpointstc.